Thanks, Tim. I couldn't help, when you were talking, thinking about the idea of the wheat and the tares growing up together until the end of the age. Just that idea that, you know, there are so many creepy things about living on the face of the earth, but we're put into that environment where we're growing up together. And when you were talking about that, I thought, what will it be like when the tares are gone? And when the wheat that's left are all of us who know that we're only there because of God's grace. You know, what will that do with regard to heaven? It's just going to be wonderful. Really wonderful. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God as a workman who does not need to be ashamed, accurately handling the word of truth. That was Paul's admonition to Timothy. Last week we talked about the bright morning star rising in our hearts. There are so many indications of what our spiritual life is supposed to look like. And when you bring that into Corinthians, there is just such a contrast that is being laid out for us so that we can see what happened in Corinth and we can discern what's happening in our own lives. As has been mentioned already, the idea of meditating is to basically, there are three words for it. You seek it, you care for, you're concerned, you make inquiry, so that implies motivation. Second means to moan and growl and utter and speak and muse, so that's the action part once you've taken an interest, and then you jump into the process. And then as that unfolds, you process it inside, and you go, well, I'm musing about it. I'm thinking, well, what does this mean? But that might involve some complaining, and it may involve some talking to God. So, you know, that whole idea about being surrounded by weeds and the fact that we originally were weeds really presents some issues related to what we can experience in our spiritual life, which I think really sets the tone for Corinthians, which I'm sure you had an opportunity to look at this week. These are the books, we're kind of taking them in the order that they're written, and I personally have been thoroughly enjoying this take at the book of Acts. I've been through Acts many times, but I'm seeing things that I haven't seen before. They're coming to the surface, and I'm putting connections together, which also is an argument that you'd think, I would guarantee you that if anybody in this room should feel like they've mastered the book of Acts and don't need to read it anymore, that would be me. But I know better than that, because it's not a matter of knowing it here, it's a matter of experiencing here. And when we get to Corinth, we're talking about the internal battles that those believers were experiencing and that we also experience in the world that we live in. And we talked a little bit last week about the environment that we're in, the divisions, the disorders, the difficulties that are occurring. Those seem to be compounding as things unfold. So the elders are cognizant of that, and we're really praying for our body that God would help us to not live like mere men, but to live like spiritual men and spiritual women. And that's kind of the context of Corinthians. And if you remember, at the beginning of the book, it talked about two kinds of wisdom. There's a wisdom that's from above and a wisdom that's from below. And the wisdom that's from below doesn't get us anywhere. And that's why it's crazy for a believer who has access to the wisdom of God. Why in the world would we not avail ourselves to the wisdom of God? And just to kind of catch up with where we were last week, turn over to chapter 3. Verses 3 and 4, for you are still fleshly, for since there is jealousy and strife among you. Jealousy and strife. A lot of that going on around us right now. Are you not fleshly, and are you not walking like mere men? For when one says, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, are you not like mere men? Because it's all about recognition, and it's all about where the pecking order is, and where you fit into the pecking order, and all that kind of stuff. That reminded me of a passage over in Romans chapter 1. If you just kind of pop back there, it's just a verse. Romans chapter 1, verse 21. And again, you know, we're talking about lots of woven threads throughout the scriptures. So when I was thinking about what we just read, I was thinking about the condition of the weeds, the condition that we are growing in. For even though they knew God, because we were made in the image of God, they did not honor him as God, nor did we give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart became darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged. Now think about this. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. It's not just that mere men are passive. We become gods, and we place ourselves in the place of God. And it takes great, great arrogance to do that. Not just as a human race, not just as a nation, but it takes a great deal of arrogance to do that personally. And there are so many sides of what that can look like. So that's the mirror man. And then if you turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1, and I, brothers, could not speak to you as to spiritual men, but as to men of flesh, as to infants. So the idea is that if you don't grow up, then you're still a baby, and I can't speak to you like somebody who's mature because you're a baby. I gave you milk to drink, not solid food, for you were not yet able to receive it. Even now, you are not yet able, for you are still fleshly. And Paul says, here's how I know it. Since there's jealousy and strife among you, are you not fleshly and are you not walking like mere men? So apparently, if we're following the wisdom of God, we grow up and we grow into spiritual men and women. And when it says men, it's obviously talking about mankind. It's not excluding women by any stretch of the imagination. And when we grow up in God ways, then we are able to make decisions and we're able to live in a way that is totally different than the weeds around us. We no longer need to live like tares. We no longer need, in one place it says, like unreasoning animals, which is what it's like when you take the place of God and not only empty it, but when you put yourself in that place. So that's just kind of those two wisdoms. That's a theme that's not just in Corinth, but it's all the way through the scriptures. And with that, I'm just really interested. Corinthians is like huge. I was thinking about teaching this morning, and I thought, well, there's no way. I mean, this could be talked about literally for weeks. And I have talked about Corinthians for weeks at times past, and we probably can, you know, find the videos online if you really want to watch them. But what I'm interested in first is maybe an observation that you had. Now, I've just given you a couple that I had about Corinth, but also maybe a question. I can't imagine that if you read Corinthians and looked at it, that you wouldn't have a series of questions, because there are some real open boxes in the book of Corinthians. And then a personal revelation, you know, that thing that happens to you when you're reading, you're going, oh my gosh, this is speaking to me, this is opening my eyes. And right along with that, maybe something that, you know, moves you. And of course, for the sake of people who are not with us, I want you to speak into a microphone, but I only want you to get this far away, because I did a COVID study and that's how far away you have to be from microphones in order to make it work. So along those lines, when you think about Corinthians and you think about these four questions, tell me. Tell me what you've seen.
When I was reading this week, I was really overcome with just the message of, or just how applicable, I guess, it is to where we're at in our culture and our body and just people around us. And verse 8, where it says, knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. I think God just kind of pierced my heart and just made me really want to pursue love. And then in 13, which, you know, we deemed it as the love chapter, if I speak with tongues of men and angels but do not have love, I become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And so the idea of love isn't just a feeling. It's not just something that's inside our hearts, but it's something that we do, something that we express to everybody around us as we kind of move in and about our work and our family and stuff. And so I was just personally convicted and challenged by God to pursue love in a different way.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know. One thing you noticed if you were kind of looking around the entire book is that you can look at 1 Corinthians 13 and go, well, this is the love chapter. This has all of the stuff in it. It's a pretty short chapter, actually, as far as actual numbers of verses. But he didn't just start talking about love in chapter 13. Paul started talking about love in chapter 1. And he talks about it all the way through the book. And then when he even gets to his salutations and his goodbyes at the end, everything in between, he is talking about how love is woven into all of the things that we do, which the Corinthians were struggling with. Yeah, so I think that idea, and in fact, you know, there are three words for love. They're all used in this book because he's explaining the different aspects of love as he talks about love. Good. Great observation. Anything else that you see or have seen?
Well, it's really hard to pick, but because this book is unbelievable, I really feel like it's timely, like what you were saying, for now, because you can just tell Paul is so focused on not getting caught up in the world. And he really is saying, you guys have gotten caught up in the world. I mean, to me, that's not what we're supposed to be pursuing. And even like the whole part where he talks about be happy where you're at right now, where God has you at right now. That's a tough one for us because, I mean, I know he's talking about marriage and in that context. And, you know, we always are striving for what are we pursuing next? You know, I want to get married or I want this or I want that. And he is like, this is not what we're supposed to be focusing on. I was thinking the verse where he said, it's in Corinthians, and I love this, how he talks about, he references, and they all drank from the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from the spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ, and how he just ties that back into the Old Testament is so beautiful to know right there, right when Moses was in the wilderness, Jesus was with him. I mean, it's just this, you could talk about this book for like weeks.
Well, that right in and of itself is just so astonishing. And that's the beautiful thing about Paul is because he was a Jew of Jews and understood the story and he had misappropriated the story as far as how it was being applied. A quick story like that. I'm reading this series of books, and it's got a Jewish character in it, and he deals a lot with like people in Rome. I'll probably tip you off on this, but I just started reading the new book the other day, and it is so blasphemous. So blasphemous about Christianity and about Judaism, I couldn't read it anymore. It's so well written. I've loved this guy, you know, and I've been reading now for 19 books, and I couldn't believe how wrong he got it about what you were just talking about. Just a little side story, because I don't want you to feel like, you know, you don't know what's going on in my life.
I feel like I've got more questions than the other revelation and observations, but so I'm hoping you can help me with a couple of things. One is the progression in the book. Is there something to that? Is he's writing, you know, I was looking at where he's writing it from in Ephesus and writing back to the Corinthians. And then is he dealing in priority order with matters because of the impact of their view of morality and sexual immorality, that's pervasive, and then on the other issues? Does it matter the order? That's one question.
Well, let's deal with that. I think because of the disorder, and if you think about how the book looked, as far as how we laid it out and broke it into pieces, I think because of the disorder and because they were acting like babies instead of... So I think he's picking out the things that they were experiencing, okay? So like they were lawsuits with each other. Well, yeah, so it feels a little bit random as far as how it's unfolding, but I don't think it was random to them when they read it. I thought, yeah, I think these are the things that they were actually experiencing. So I didn't sense an order there other than the fact that, okay, here's the disorder, I'm going to deal with it, boom, 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 because I want things to be done. I think he says this, doesn't he, in a decent and orderly manner. So
yeah, he gets there when he's talking about the communion part.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple things that are just very different than how we deal with stuff. One, you mentioned the lawsuits and the disputes within the body. And I presume that was legal stuff as well. And then even this, you know, the chapter 5 where he says, I have decided to deliver such a one over to Satan for the destruction of his flesh. I have never seen, I've always, I've read that. I'm not sure what does that look like in terms of our body life. Or he talks about us judging angels and then judging the matters of this life. So my question is, some of these things, he talks like they get it, but I'm not getting it, what that might look like.
Yeah, there's a, in the middle of that whole conversation, he basically makes the statement about if you had to leave immoral people, you'd have to leave the world. What do we have to do with judging outsiders? So to answer your question about what does that look like, I think us as a community, if we are choosing to live the way the Corinthians were, I think that Paul would turn us over to Satan for the destruction of our flesh. And the elders have done that before. I personally have been involved with that before in confronting people, and they don't want to live based on the standards that are in the scriptures. And this is really different than like, well, religious people live this way and non-religious people live this way. This is like somebody who should know better. And these people that he's addressing should have known better, but they were still holding on to things that were so obviously destructive to relationships, but they were obviously destructive to their relationship with God. So I think that the part when he talks about that, you'd have to leave the world. This isn't about looking at the world around us and going, what a bunch of dirt bags. We know we're weeds, right? We know we've grown up, even if we're wheat, we know we are. It's not about judging those who are outside. It's about people who name the name of Christ. And then I think we have a responsibility. And it doesn't just come up in Corinthians. It comes up elsewhere in the scriptures. So I don't know if that's helpful, but good questions. Else? Well, sure, I was just all the way over there, Todd.
Thank you. In chapter 12, reading through that, I've had kind of like revelation or re-revelation, because I've read it a number of times, and it always brings me back to this, but and I'll just kind of start a little bit. It starts probably about 4. I'm just going to go down a little lower in there, where he's talking about gifts, and to another effecting of miracles, and to another prophecy, and to another distinguishing of spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, and to another the interpretation of tongues. But one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually just as he wills. And every time I read through that, and again this week, just bringing me back to the fact that he's willed something, some gift in me, and it's my responsibility to bring that back to the body, because each of us has something that we provide. And it's so easy to look and see what others provide. It's easy to see gifts that others have and really appreciate those. And it's always hard to see what the gift is that I provide and to sometimes maybe not take that seriously enough and really bring that back in. So just, you know, searching my soul and looking for what it is that God wants me to do in any given situation, and then to be brave enough to step up and do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, how loving is it to not investigate the gifts that have been given to us? How loving is it for us to never activate the gifts that have been given to us? And how selfish it is of us to ignore that part of what we have to provide for the welfare of others. You know, these people were using their gifts. They were very gifted, but they were hurting the people around them with their gifts. So just because you have spiritual gifts doesn't mean you know how to use them. Second of all, that's why he discusses the gifts in the context of chapter 13. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but don't have love, I'm nothing. So yeah, I think that's a very good point, that idea of embracing our giftedness, understanding it. It's not something, it's one of the first things I'll start talking to, Roland and Alitza. They're believers, and they're just brand new believers in the last couple of years. And that's when once they got settled, that's one of the first questions that I ask them, and I've got this little thing, and if you guys want to go through it, it gives you a general direction to go with your spiritual gifts, because understanding your spiritual gifts equips you to love. And that's what the world needs, is more love, right? Good. Great observation. A couple more? Oh my gosh. I don't know what to do. Well, my wife raised her hand. You know how that goes. So I'm going to give it to Erica, my non-wife.
This close? Okay. In chapter 2, verse 14, but a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. There's an individual that's close to our family in the last several years, and he's a really good man, but there's times when we realize that it's almost like a veil is over his eyes because, and of course we can't see into his heart or discern for him, but that act of really being saved by Christ, turning his life to him, reveals things to us that can't be revealed without Christ. There's this this goodness and this, all those, you know, like they say, all those good qualities. I was a good person. I was a good man. These things. And they are very good, and they have blessed our family. But there are moments when we realize, and how this came up, this discussion, was I was talking to Jeremy about how sometimes I'm just like, why doesn't he get it? Why doesn't he, you know, that next step? And it was the next day that I read this and I realized, yeah, you know, I can't discern into his heart, but I can pray that he would accept Christ and that that veil would be lifted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, veil is a good way to put it. And that's why Paul has chosen to explain that, because, you know, until the veil is lifted, you know, we're blind. We you know, how can we see? Which is why it's crazy to judge somebody who's an outsider based on the standards that we're trying to live by, because, you know, if you can't see, you can't see. What can you do about that? You have the last word, it looks like.
Two things. The whole teaching about the meat sacrifice to idols, I'm curious kind of what we've all run into in our lives that would compare to that. And then the other thing is just how Paul always takes it back to just to the bottom line. There's kind of an argument about, you know, the man was made first and then the woman, but he kind of responds with, but it just doesn't matter. We're all made by God. So that's not an argument to have. And the same way with he gets down to the work I've been given, or the work I do. The work's been given to me by God. It's my job that he's given me, but he's also given me the energy to do it. I mean, it has nothing. He takes it right down to we're nothing without God doing it, creating us, giving us the work to do, giving us the energy to do it. So in spite of all the things that they're going through, it's really kind of, there are parts of it that are just so encouraging, just yeah. Such a reminder that this is just all about God, Jesus.
Yeah, that's, you know, we spent a little bit of time at the beginning of Corinthians last week talking about his statement about all things belong to you. All things belong to you. You belong to Christ. Christ belongs to God. I mean, that's incredible. And what that means is that when I stand before God, no matter how many of the good works that I've walked in, that God has given me to walk in, like it talks about in Ephesians, they're not going to go to my credit. You know, the best I can hope for is, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, you have been faithful in little things. I will entrust you with many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Okay, well, I told Bernie she was the last one, but Sam, I'll give you the last shot.
In chapter 3, in verse 18, it talks about, do not deceive yourselves. If any of you thinks you're wise, by the standard of this age, you should become fools. I was just, after I read that the first time, I thought, wow, I think I'm really wise sometimes, but in reality, I should become a fool in God's eye. That's weird to think about that.
It's pretty counterintuitive, isn't it? It isn't the way that the world thinks at all. Okay, well, those are great. And, you know, Bernie, you reflected on a couple of questions that I thought everybody would have. I mean, that whole men and women thing, you know, and head coverings and all that kind of stuff. But I haven't figured all those out yet, so you guys will just have to figure it out by yourself. Not really. Look at a few more things in our remaining moments together. As we talked a little bit about last week, chapter 3, verse 10, we build wisely. So right now, you are actively involved in building the kingdom. That's what's happening. Now, some of us are doing an engaged job, and some of us are doing a disengaged job, and some of us are even doing a disobedient job. But either way, you and I are building. You know, the whole idea of things being gray, or the idea that, you know, if there's no movement, then that's a safe place to be, I'm not sure that you can come up with that in reading the scriptures. According to the grace of God, which was given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another is building on it. But each man must be careful how he builds on it. For no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid. I'm given the foundation by God, but I'm building on top of that foundation. Now, if any man builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, all things that are going to disappear. It's not like the gold is better than the straw. It's what people build with. We build with the things that are in that list right there. Each man's work will become evident, for the day will show it, because it is to be revealed with fire, and the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work. Now, this is talking about the judgment of believers' works, if you were reading a theological book. And basically what that means is that when this fire comes through, the stuff that is garbage is going to disappear. You know, you've heard all the sayings about, you know, you can't take it with you. There are actually things that we can take with us. And they have to do with what he's trying to describe right here. So we have to build wisely. So I'm always trying to ask myself the question, my time, my talents, and my treasures, am I using those things to produce love? I actually got halfway through this week, and, you know, I felt like God smiled on my heart and said, you know, Bernie was gone, so I had all this time on my hands. And God smiled on my heart and said, this is what it's like, Dave. You go from place to place, situation to situation, and you do good, and you share. That is a beautiful thing to me, like it talks about in Hebrews. But right along with that, building wisely, that implicit in the story of the book of 1 and 2 Corinthians is that we build up one another. And if you pop over to chapter 6, and this was in the context of the lawsuits, he lays that as the foundation of it, but in chapter 16, verse 19, "Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God?" That is a gift from God. "And that you don't belong to yourself. You are not your own. For you have been bought, your soul, you body and soul have been bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body." And what does that look like? That looks like me taking my life and investing it in the kindness and in the love for other people. So I was thinking about the whole idea of compasses, and you know, when you listen to people talk, you go, oh my gosh, there are politicians right now that I have no idea what their compass consists of. You know, it's almost like I feel when they talk, the needle on the compass is like spinning around. So I got that image in my mind, and I kind of got on the internet and looked up some really cool compasses, or compi, I guess it would be. And as I looked at it, I thought, you know, this is exactly what Corinthians is trying to describe. Let me explain the compass that comes from God. Let me explain the compass that comes from the world. So I thought this through related to how the book of Corinthians was constructed. And as I'm looking at this compass that is the Spirit's compass, the first thing, and somebody brought it up a little bit earlier, I need to learn from what Israel learned. And what did they learn? They learned that it doesn't do any good to crave evil things. It doesn't do any good to be arrogant in your relationship with God. That's what chapter 10 is all about. We learn from Israel and we reject what Israel distilled from encountering the living God. Also in chapter 12, we talked about the whole idea about using our gifts spiritually. They were very gifted, but they didn't necessarily use them spiritually. How can I know if I'm using my gifts spiritually or not? Because of chapter 13. I can look at chapter 13 and I can say, is that me? Is what I'm doing right now reflective of those things, or am I reflecting other things? Is there something I'm trying to get by using my gifts? And is it something that is going to benefit me? That leads to embracing a life of love in chapter 13. And I kind of want to end with that. I'd like to talk about clinging to the resurrection, because 1 Corinthians 15 is like, this is like one of my drop-dead favorite chapters of the entire Bible, because it is so filled with hope and so filled with truth and so filled with the reality of my resurrection. Okay, so I love that. But I want to talk a little bit about the love and what it looked like. So turn over to 13, because this is kind of the epitome of what he's trying to explain. And bear with me, pretend you're at a wedding. "If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels but don't have love, I become like a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but I don't have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor," and I can't help but think about the misplaced ideas that we have of righteousness in our world right now. If we would just read 1 Corinthians 13, we would know that we're missing the mark, that we're living like weeds. "If I give all my possessions to feed the poor, if I surrender my body to be burned," wow, that's pretty radical. "But if I don't have love, it doesn't profit me anything. Love is patient. Love is kind. It's not jealous. Love doesn't brag. It's not arrogant. It doesn't act unbecomingly." Now, you think about this context of this book. These are all the things that they were doing. This is how they weren't loving, or this is how they were loving, depending upon which part of the list. "Does not act unbecomingly, does not seek its own, it's not provoked, it does not take into account a wrong suffered, it does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices in the truth, it bears all things, believes all things, it hopes all things, it endures all things. Love never fails. all the gifts will fail because they're all going to go away. What you and I invest in love is never going to go away. It is one of the things that you can take with you. Now, some of you are sitting here and you're 16 years old and you're going, that's the last thing on my mind. But look at guys like me. I'm starting to think about that. What am I going to take with me when I go? Chapter 16 kind of, I told you that I thought that love was talked about through the whole book, so I want to just kind of end with a couple of passages here. Chapter 16, verses 13 through 14. Be on the alert. Be on the alert. Stand firm in faith. So watch what's coming. Pay attention to the horizon. Pay attention to what's around you. Stand firm in the faith. Act like spiritual men. Not mere men. We've already talked about that. Now he's explaining what it's like to be spiritual men. Let all that you do, let everything that you do be done in love. I mean, how amazing is that? What a challenge that is for a believer, Corinthian or otherwise, to be able to live in a way that would please God. And if you pop down, it's interesting. And this is one of the places where I started geeking out about some of the language when I was reading, because I thought, this doesn't make sense to me. If anyone does not love the Lord, he's to be accursed. Gee, what the heck does that mean? Well, that of all of the translations in my New American Standard Bible, I think that might be the worst one. I'm serious. I looked at it before, and I spent extra time looking at it in preparation for today. And basically, what he's saying is that if anyone does not love the Lord, that word is not agapeo, and agapeo means to seek the best of the object loved. This word is the word phileo. And it means to embrace. So he's switching the words for love because he's trying to get his point across. If anyone does not phileo the world or embrace the Lord, love the Lord or embrace him. So it's not a matter of I love the Lord. It's a matter of embracing God. That's inherent in the picture that's there. He is to be accursed. And I looked that up because it didn't make any sense in the context of the love that was being talked about here. And basically, the root words that are translated here, accursed, means let that be an offering back to God. Because God is the only one who can do anything about people not embracing him. It is not something that I have control over or you have control over. And that really struck my heart as I was reading it. And I thought, you know, part of the love that I show for the people around me and for the people who are inside the faith and the people who are outside the faith is, am I willing to offer them up to God? You know, so that they can escape. And I'll be honest with you, you know, when I think about the things I pray for, and these are some of the bigger areas that I keep returning to. When I think about somebody who has disappointed me, when I think about somebody that I feel no hope for whatsoever, and that includes family members as well as people outside my family, I remember the fact that God is the only one. God is the only one who can activate his love and help people to be able to extend themselves back to him. So those were a few of my thoughts. I sent you an email. Actually, Delaine did it because I probably couldn't have figured it out because it had some technical things involved. But we're talking about some things that we want to focus on. You know, COVID's not going to be over for a while, right? I mean, who knows? I'm saying I think there's going to be some kind of a shift maybe after the election, depending upon what happens. But I think we're in this till the end of the year, is the way it appears like to me. And I'm not sure that there are certain people who plan on that ending after that. So you can be praying for the elders. We're going to wrestle with some of those COVID-like issues this week and talk about it in relationship to loving one another, you know, the way the scriptures talk about. But I want to initiate a conversation about the gift of days, about building marriages. I'm meeting with a young couple right now, and they're not here today, so that's good. And I have never seen a young couple. I've had people that have kind of fit on this level, but I've never seen a young couple that actually goes, and if I say, well, why don't you read these chapters, or why don't you read these passages, they come back with notes. They come back with questions that they have. And it's so cool, because they are so interested in doing what God wants them to do with their lives. So I was thinking as I was talking to them that I've gotten really good at having these kinds of conversations with people. And seeing I'm not planning on being here as long as all of you are, I feel like that should be passed on. So if you're interested in having that conversation, whether it for your own marriage, be for your own marriage, or just to help other people, I'd love to have you be a part of that. And then also the idea of getting together and talking about being mentored by God, because that was kind of preempted a little bit by COVID. So if those interest you at all, we're going to make those happen, whether it's via Zoom calls or part together, part via Zoom. But those conversations are good for the heart. I don't want myself, like I'm falling into, okay, so there's not a lot of sports to choose from, right? And there are not a lot of leisure type things. And so I actually found myself watching the original Fantastic Four movie the other day. And I thought, man, this is such a bad movie. This is so bad. And yet here I am, my wife's out of town, I'm sitting there and I'm watching Fantastic Four. And I'm thinking, you know, it's really easy not only to be robbed of some of the freedoms we're being robbed of right now, it is a great time to make sure that we are preserving the time that we have, redeeming the time that we have. And so these are some ideas for that. And this is my favorite picture, my love picture that I found this week. And there is a post on this that I put up yesterday that kind of leads into 2 Corinthians. Because 1 and 2 Corinthians are not separate from each other. They're tied together because they're talking about the same people.